I think cloud and internet is wonderful tools at allowing us to deliver on our vision of democratized IT. 5G is going to play a huge role as we get more and more IoT, the benefits it can drive. We've now come across the issue with latency as we're trying to use the cloud. So having 5G in place is going to be phenomenal in kind of swatting down that particular roadblock.
Welcome to The Restless Ones. I'm Jonathan Strickland. I've spent more than a decade really learning about technology, what makes it tick, and then describing and explaining that to my audience. But it's the conversations with the world's most unconventional thinkers, the leaders at the intersection of technology and business, that fascinate me the most. In partnership with T-Mobile for Business, I explore the unique set of challenges that CIOs and CTOs face, from advancements in cloud and edge computing, software as a service, Internet of Things, and, of course, 5G. We are often left wondering how the leading minds in business continue to thrive. Let's find out. Our guest today is Rhonda Gass, CIO of Stanley Black & Decker. I was excited to speak with Rhonda to find out how a company that traces its history all the way back to before the Civil War has come to embrace the digital age. It's one thing to launch a startup that has data analysis and AI applications baked into its DNA. That journey comes with its own set of challenges. For that kind of story, you should really listen to our episode with David Chen, the Chief Technology Officer of Skycatch. That's a company that focuses on data analysis with a heavy emphasis on drones. But it's another thing entirely to help guide a company with such a long legacy as Stanley Black & Decker to embrace the digital age. Companies can have a lot of momentum, and it takes a ton of effort and strategy to put them on a new course. As I learned, Rhonda and her team leverage data and technology to augment Stanley Black & Decker's mission. In some ways, things haven't really changed. But in others, what has happened is nothing short of transformational. But I'm getting ahead of myself. First, I wanted to learn a bit more about Rhonda. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us for The Restless Ones, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Well, I always like to get to know my guests a little bit before we really dive down into the nuts and bolts of what they do. So, could you tell me a little bit about how you first got interested in technology in general, and when did you decide that this is something you were going to study and pursue as a career?
Oh, Jonathan. Well, to tell you how it all started, I'll certainly date and age myself, but I got interested back in the late 1980s. I was often at a particular friend's house in high school. After all, she had a great pool in her backyard, and I lived in the South. But her father had a Commodore 64, and it was set up in a spare bedroom, and I often kind of walked past it and wondered what that thing was for. I asked a few questions about it, had some floppy drive storage, and he was really intrigued that I wanted to know something about it because his daughter, my friend, had no interest whatsoever. So he took up some time with me, kind of show me what it could do, which, as we all know, in hindsight, it didn't do that much. And I remember thinking just how different and off norm it was. And I said, this is something that I'm interested in. I don't know exactly what computer technology is or was and how it was going to impact the world. But I knew kind of from those moments that it was something that I wanted to learn more about and be involved in. So I was good in science and math. So when it came time to enroll in college, I declared my major to be computer science and just never looked back.
Was there any particular area in computer science that really spoke to you?
Oh, man, this is sad. There was a course where we had to take a really simple problem and solve it in multiple different languages. And there were some languages that just, if you remember, there was something called Snowball, and then there was COBOL and PL1, and I know I'm dating myself, Fortran, all of those things. But man, when you got to that assembly level code and you could dig into the registers and actually see where the bits were moving around, it wasn't the best way to write a sentence or solve a problem of that nature, but it was just more fun to me to be able to look into the registers and and trace the zeros and ones.
All
right, I'm sick. We've established it.
No, Rhonda, I feel like I would have loved to watch The Matrix with you. And when all those zeros and ones come down the screen, you would say, they misspelled that.
I've forgotten more than I remember.
That's fair. I'm sure what you remember is more than anything I've learned. So you're still way ahead of the game. Well, what was your first job in the IT field?
Ah, well, this one may surprise you a little bit. I actually didn't start in, you know, traditional IT until I was about 20 years into my career.
No.
I was certainly in technology, but I was on the product development side of the technology spectrum. I started with a company called NCR. At the time, we were vertically integrating all the components in the stack of client server architecture computer systems. And so we were doing motherboards, storage subsystems, operating systems, all that good stuff. So I didn't officially join an IT organization until I joined Dell. And I joined Dell on the product side of the organization, spent about 6 years there. And Dell was, if you can remember, and probably still is, was on this rocket ship of growth. And the internal tech team just wasn't keeping pace with the growth of the business. There were a lot of complaints. Large investments were being sent that way. And I was asked to transition into IT because it needed a lot of adult supervision to make sure that all of these investments were delivering the right value. And I'll tell you, I wasn't sure I wanted to make that leap. I really didn't understand the function that well. My impressions were not positive. I felt like it was this bureaucratic organization. It was slow, certainly not innovative, and likely the place where the lesser engineers went to spend their time. I know that sounds terrible, but I am so glad I took that leap and would recommend that everyone spend some time getting to know the function. It'll make you a better contributor. It'll make you a better leader. I mean, you see every transaction and you also see all the opportunities to improve efficiency. So it's a great function. I love it.
Right. And it's the function that touches every other function within the company, whereas some might be, you know, somewhat siloed. IT has, you know, it touches on every single other part of an organization.
Absolutely. Fascinating, too.
Well, what brought you to Stanley Black & Decker?
Well, I was heads down in the IT function at Dell and got a call from a recruiter and they said Stanley Black & Decker. And I said, located where? You know, you hear the Southern accent. And they said, New Britain, Connecticut. I had to get a map out or, you know, Google it to see where it was. And they said, just talk to them. They're doing some fantastic things. It's a great leadership team. So I did. And I was fascinated by all of the different businesses that Stanley Black & Decker was in, from the tools and storage, where they're a leader, to the industrial business segment, and even a security segment where electronic security was being done, and thought that that diversity would be fantastic, pursued it, and here I am almost 9 years later.
Fantastic. Can you give us an idea about how big your department is?
We invest about 2.5% of revenue in IT annually, give or take the year, depending on the ebbs and flow, if we're doing a big acquisition or something like that. But that's above the industrial kind of segment benchmark. So we spend well because we believe in growth, we believe in innovation, and most importantly, understand the link of a well-architected, well-running IT and accelerating both of those things. For headcount, just before the COVID pandemic, we were about 1,500 person resource organization globally. And I say just before COVID, because in the year prior, we planned a large integration with a managed service provider, which has now resulted in our internal headcount being just over about 550 people. And our provider headcount is over 1,400. So it's a substantial operation.
Mm. Well, this is a good chance for us to kind of segue into talking about your approach to leadership. And I caught a conversation you had where you were talking about the different categories of IT within Stanley Black & Decker with BT, CT, and OT. Can you kind of give us an overview of what you mean by that?
Yes. We use digital technology in all areas of the company, as do most companies today. But we call out these three focuses: business technology, BT, which is your traditional IT, operations technology, which is the technology within our manufacturing and distribution centers that connect and automate machine-to-machine functions, And then our commercial technology, which is our digital products and services that we provide to our customers. Now, came up with these terms not to define or divide our efforts, but really to align them. So while each area uses these technologies in different ways, we found that we were talking past each other at times because things were similar yet different. So once we got this clarity in place about, you know, who was doing what and how it was being used, we could drive accountability. We were able to focus on the interfaces that connect them in a much more kind of architected, standardized, and agile way. So it's proven very beneficial in allowing us to go faster, even though it sounds like alphabet soup to someone perhaps on the outside.
Well, what is your role with regard to these different technologies? What do you tend to focus on?
Yeah, so I have responsibility for the traditional IT or the business technology that runs the enterprise. So your marketing software, sales, engineering, manufacturing, distribution, service support, all of that business architecture functionality. Mm-hmm. Also includes a data platform as well as the connectivity platform. So things that you would expect in a traditional IT organization. But we have a separate team focused on the OT technology mm-hmm. that runs inside of our factories. And then we have many product teams across our various businesses that are focused on the products and solutions and services that they sell to our customers to help them solve their problems. So I will say, though, I do cover, because the Global Security Office reports to me. And so I have cybersecurity across all the technology areas. And you can't pick up a newspaper, listen to anything without hearing the importance of cybersecurity. And we wanted to put all of that capability together, and rightly so, I think, to kind of centralize our efforts and have a greater impact.
At T-Mobile for Business, unconventional thinking means we see things differently, so you can focus on what matters most. Where some see another small town, we see businesses in need of connectivity. So we built the largest 5G network to cover cities, towns, and the most interstate miles in between. Where some see a caller in a queue, we see an opportunity for our experts to provide solutions without transfers. Where some see another virtual meeting, we see 5G enabling wireless, real-time translations almost anywhere you do business. Our unique approach has made us the leader in 5G, number one in customer satisfaction, and a partner who includes first-class benefits like 5G in every plan. So you get it all without trade-offs. Unconventional thinking is better for business. T-Mobile for Business. Open Signal awards T-Mobile as America's fastest 5G network USA. 5G user experience report July 2021. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. Some uses may require certain plan or features. See T-Mobile.com. For JD Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about some of the major endeavors that your team has undertaken during your tenure with Stanley Black & Decker?
All right. So I'm coming up on 9 years with the company, Jonathan. So sit back. It's going to take me a while. I'm just kidding. But to start, we were the first function in the modern company to centralize. And I say modern because we're over a 175-year-old company. So I'm not sure I have the complete history, but this centralization is significant in that we had traditionally run the company as independent segments and P&Ls, all with their own IT. And the result really was great. It was a no excuses culture that achieved its financial objectives with autonomy and speed. But we also did about 100 acquisitions in a 10-year timeframe. And that autonomy with respect to your technology decisions really wreaked havoc on the IT landscape from both an efficiency and an effectiveness perspective. So by centralizing, we were able to coordinate talent, investments, contracts, architecture to really be a value driver for the company. Of course, it's still a work in progress. If I could, that was kind of wave one in my tenure. Wave two has been all about the democratization of IT. And I know that's a overused term, but we're doing it because we know that IT must kind of position the technology of base of the company for rapid innovation and change. It's not slowing down. But again, 175-year-old company built with a focus on inorganic growth, a lot of acquisitions. The technology base needs some work to be democratized. And we've done some great things. And one of the first things I did was an M&A playbook. You heard 100 acquisitions. And we now have a comprehensive M&A playbook in how we approach. That's one example. But, you know, getting out of our company-owned data centers, rationalizing applications, moving to SD-WAN, adopting Facebook's workplace for collaboration. We've tried to sprinkle in innovation as well as the mundane work of rolling up your sleeves and doing app wrap. Come a long way.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I've been part of a few different mergers and acquisitions. I've been in organizations that have gone through that. And the process of getting everything to align, everything from the culture level down to that basic IT infrastructure so that things run smoothly, that is a large task just on a one case basis. And of course, you're talking about that across dozens. So I imagine that that ends up being an enormous focus for your team.
Absolutely. And then, of course, with the new areas that I talked a little bit about earlier, like the OT space, we've been working to engineer and install edge compute so that the OT to BT, we really, really believe that data at the center of everything we do, and then the connectivity all around is the way to really hyperscale, if you will, our ability to deliver on business results.
Well, and you've touched on something that I really wanted to kind of get into as well about data. What are some of the changes you've seen in your career in IT, especially as this concept of big data has started to come into maturity?
Yeah, so we used to use data as primarily a financial and performance analysis type of tool. So it was very much used by the finance organization. And it still is today. And they're just asking more advanced questions and doing much more advanced analytics around pricing and things of that nature. But every crevice of the organization now is asking what if questions and what if I married this data set to that data set and we're able to look at it. So what I want to do is I know those folks know the questions that they want to ask. I want to make sure they have the data at their fingertips and they're not waiting on some IT organization to rationalize it for them, get it on the roadmap. You know, the bureaucracy that I felt like I was dealing with when I wasn't in IT. Of, you know, Rhonda, let me get you on the roadmap. Let me talk to this team. Let me talk to that team. I'm like, I'm just trying to drive revenue. I don't want to be that blocker. I want to be that enabler. Mm-hmm. And by having data at the center with microservices or APIs that they can access it at the point of impact is really what we're trying to achieve.
It's phenomenal to me because our world has truly become quantifiable well beyond anything I would have ever anticipated. When I was growing up, you just didn't think that you would be encountering various technologies that would be able to measure performance in all different directions by multiple different metrics, and that all of this could have meaning if you know what to do with the data. Otherwise, it just becomes an overwhelming amount of information.
Absolutely. And so we do what we like to call kind of use case data mining, if you will. And so you have a use case in mind, and then you line up the data elements that you need in order to attack that versus trying to go across the entire enterprise and rationalize all the data in our footprint. So that's the approach we've taken. It's proven pretty effective.
After getting a better understanding of Rhonda's background and experiences, I turned the conversation toward the challenges, I mean opportunities, she encounters as CIO of Stanley Black & Decker.
Well, you know, I was going to say, maybe I'm a glass half full type person. I don't really see challenges. I see opportunities. I know it's not easy. I really think, and we've sort of touched on it in our discussion so far, but change activation. You can put a lot of technology in, but it won't transform a company. Activating the change and engaging folks in the organization on new ways of working, that, to me, that's the secret sauce. And that's the really difficult part. We've been great optimizers in the past, right? So we can go in, we can take what we do, we lean it out, we automate it. And that has value, but it has incremental value. It doesn't have transformative value. And what we need to do now is be transformers and focus first on that outcome you want to drive and then change the way you work to achieve it. And then let's talk about the technology that'll enable it. And so many times we get that cart before the horse. And so if there's any opportunity, I think it's that one. And I just term it change activation.
And I think that that ties into themes that I've heard throughout this season of The Restless Ones, particularly the idea that you don't turn to technology for technology's sake. You have an identified problem that you want to tackle, and you look for what solutions are best served to help you achieve that opportunity. And for people of my level, it's like saying, don't go down the rabbit hole of just buying every tool because you think the tools are pretty. What's the thing you're actually trying to build, and make sure you get the right tools for that job?
Right. And I've gone so far as the way I work with my organization is to let the business users experiment with those fancy tools on the edge, if you will, mm-hmm. and see what works for them. We focus on that foundation. Again, is the data standardized? Are our processes standardized? Are things automated? Are they accessible via APIs? And the rest will take care of itself. Are we there yet? No. But that's kind of how we're thinking about it.
What are some of the technologies you would consider to be like, you know, core and fundamental to your division? What are the things you think of as just being, this is the bedrock upon which we build?
The bedrock upon which we build is going to be some basic stuff. I mean, cloud is super important, and I'm a fan of all clouds. I believe in fit for purpose. So I think cloud and internet is wonderful tools at allowing us to deliver on our vision of democratized IT. 5G is going to play a huge role as we get more and more IoT, the benefits it can drive with, you know, pretty much sensors on everything and machines talking to machines. We've now come across the issue with latency as we're trying to use the cloud. So having 5G in place is going to be phenomenal in kind of swatting down that particular roadblock. So those would be the ones that come to mind.
Those are favorite topics of mine, obviously. So I appreciate those coming up. For someone who deals so thoroughly with the world of information, if you're talking about Internet of Things, then you're talking about getting more data from more sources at more points of contact than ever before. And when you have the ability to transmit information without having things tethered, and you're still getting that incredible throughput and incredibly low latency, it opens up opportunities for responsiveness at such a low delay that I think all elements of business are going to be incredibly transformed moving forward. I was eager to get Rhonda's perspective regarding various new technologies, but I also wanted to learn more about how she helped guide such an historic company, one that was dependent on legacy systems and processes, through a digital transformation.
You're giving me an opportunity to talk about something that we're really proud of, and that's our operating model. And the first generation of our operating model was called SFS, or Stanley Fulfillment System. And as you can imagine, it focused on lean principles, apply them to everything, likely from our manufacturing heritage, right? We just revamped that model, and it starts with people and technology at the center. It's a combination of data, connectivity, some of the themes you've heard, but then also people effectively using it that will make this model work. Now, around our central model there with people and technology at the center, we have four things. We have the extraordinary customer experience. So not just customer experience, but we want it to be an extraordinary customer experience. And so that's meeting the customer where and when and how they want to be met with the right products and services at the right time. And I like to say in plenty of it. And that has a lot of implications to the people and technology at the center that are enabling it. So you'll see how this all operates together. We also have a key focus area that's called extreme innovation. So not innovation, but extreme innovation. We expect everyone to innovate. We expect incremental innovation everywhere. But this is harnessing technology to provide better products and services to our customers. So you're going to hear that customer theme throughout as well. And then there's something that is really close to our heritage around performance resiliency. And that's using data and analytics and AI to sustain our continued top quartile financial performance. So making sure we're always optimizing and sustaining and driving value. And the fourth one is operations excellence. We're a manufacturing company at heart. That's what our 175 years plus has been built on. And we don't want to lose sight of operations excellence. But it's also being innovated around some of the Industry 4.0, all of the advanced data and analytics being applied inside of that environment. We have, I believe, 140 or so manufacturing and distribution centers around the globe. So our path is charted, and we've got quite a bit of work to do in that arena as well.
Well, and I've talked to a few people who have been parts of, you know, worked with companies that are, you know, around the centennial mark. We're getting closer to the two centennial mark for Stanley Black & Decker. I imagine that the digital transformation, it's hard for me to even conceptualize what that process is like when you're talking about a legacy company that has that much history in it, one that you might not immediately associate with things like a digital transformation and a reliance upon data and AI. Was the process of actually implementing one that required a lot of conversations and convincing people to go down this route?
You know, I don't know that it took convincing, but it did take a tops-down and bottoms-up alignment. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going after innovation for innovation's sake, mm-hmm. or technology for technology's sake, but meaningful innovation and meaningful technology that's aligned with our purpose, which is for those who make the world. It's aligned with our values, aligned with, you know, everything we're about. And so I think that's where the work has been involved, as always, right? Creating that clarity and making sure that, you know, our close to 60,000 employees understand what we're doing and why. That's where the conversations took place, more than the fact that we needed to digitally transform.
Well, that's great. One thing I really wanted to talk about, it's because it's sort of a passion interest of mine, is that recently, we've really seen a lot of momentum being built behind the right to repair movement, this idea of empowering people to be able to do things more themselves. And that, in turn, is seeing kind of a rise in sort of the DIY approach to everything, really, but specifically to repairs and to tools. In what ways is the company using data to help take advantage of this kind of unique situation?
Anything that fuels DIY is fantastic for us. And we're kind of right at that intersection. And we are definitely amping up our capabilities around what our end users are doing with our products and services, not just the channel capabilities and what and how it might be sold. COVID has been a great experiment in DIY, from what we do in tools, what we do in our outdoor products. I think everyone sitting around on their sofa, which for what they thought was going to be 2 or 3 weeks, which turned into 2 or 3 months, which turned into almost 2 years now, saw a lot of opportunity to improve not only the inside of their homes, but the outside of their homes. And we've been right there with them all along the way, trying to use data, use analytics to continue to meet their needs.
Yeah, I imagine that there will be further opportunities in the future because of this. I also imagine that a lot of people are starting to look at, different approaches to being able to do your own repairs, simply because this experience has taught a lot of us that that's a handy skill to have when you when you can't be certain that you can get someone to come to your home, or you might not even feel safe in that case. So I imagine.
Well, and the sustainability element of it as well is also super important for us as we think about the three things we care about as a company. It's our performance. We want to be known as an innovative company. And then corporate social responsibility is the third leg of that stool. And all of these things are converging right in our wheelhouse so that we're sustaining our homes and sustaining our gardens. And it's got a nice element as well.
Agreed. Well, you mentioned a little bit about AI. Can you talk a little bit more about how AI and how automation play a role at your company?
Yeah, so we're using AI in lots of different areas, but I would call out our Industry 4.0 initiatives, where we're trying to use it to understand machine uptime and downtime. And you can imagine you can also use that in our offerings to provide service around some of the equipment that we provide our customers. So that would be one area. Also, just looking at our internal operations and how our processes perform. And what can we learn from those activities to, again, go back to our core, really optimize what we do and how we do it. Mm. So using it everywhere.
That's also incredible. Well, can you tell me a little bit about the way that Stanley Black & Decker approaches the as a service model of business? Because as I understand it, there are multiple as-a-service lines of business over at Stanley Black & Decker.
Yeah, I would start with our security business in that, you know, it's been a traditional in security, our electronic security in particular, where you have your badge and badge readers and monitoring type systems, very, very ripe for technology disruption per se, and in not just in technology disruption, but technology disruption because of the value that can be driven from as a service models. Mm-hmm. So analyzing all of that data that these readers and monitoring centers are able to capture and provide value back to your end user as a result, you know, that's where the future is. And that's how as a service, I mean, if you think about it in terms of value that we can then monetize, that's where it all comes together.
Well, and what are some of the emerging technologies that you find particularly promising? Like, what are some that you're eager to have some experience with?
I am supremely interested in 5G really materializing in a grand way for us. Mm-hmm. So if you think about where we do manufacturing and distribution, it's in pretty remote areas. So there's quite a bit of heavy lift that still needs to be done. And I'm very optimistic that's going to happen. But when that does, it's going to open up a whole wave of opportunity for us. And so I look forward to that. There are some that, quite frankly, I'm not quite sure what to do with yet, but we do have folks in our company that are experimenting. But looking at quantum computing, not sure I know what to do with that. And I'm still not quite clear on what I would do with the blockchain and some of the crypto currencies right now. But I know we'll figure it out. I'm more optimistic than pessimistic about it.
Well, since you were getting into that assembly machine language, I can't wait for you to get your hands into some quantum computing where it's not just a zero or a one, but it's both at the same time.
Can't even imagine.
The more I read about it, the less I feel I understand it.
Absolutely.
I couldn't let Rhonda go without asking her one more thing. What do you think was the most surprising development in technology over the last decade?
Wow. The adoption rate, and particularly what we've seen in COVID, has been what comes out of need is how innovation, when there's a need, can really take hold. And I think COVID showed us that innovation with a need is the magic.
Yeah. No, the phrase necessity is the mother of invention is not just a saying. It is life.
And we saw it happen, didn't we?
We did. We still do. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us on The Restless Ones. This has been a fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
As someone standing on the outside of companies like Stanley Black & Decker, I'm truly struck by the power of information. Before hosting this show and having conversations like the one I had with Rhonda, I didn't really appreciate how valuable information is and how critical a component data analysis is for an organization's ability to thrive in the modern world. Leveraging information to better serve customers, partners, and employees is, I think, a distinguishing factor when it comes to measuring a company's success. The companies that do it well set themselves apart from the rest of the pack. And as we see more IoT deployment and 5G accessibility, the amount and quality of information available is growing exponentially. It will be a challenge, or perhaps an opportunity, to take advantage of that. But I think there's no doubt that the companies that do take those opportunities will be the benchmark organizations in their respective industries. Thank you for listening to The Restless Ones. Be sure to tune in to future episodes, where I'll have more conversations with leaders in tech who are shaping the future of how technology and business intertwine. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
At T-Mobile for Business, unconventional thinking means we see things differently, so you can focus on what matters most. That's why we've become the leader in 5G, number one in customer satisfaction, and a partner who includes 5G in every plan, so you get it all. Unconventional thinking is better for business.
Open Signal Awards T-Mobile as America's fastest 5G network USA. 5G user experience report July 2021. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. Some uses may require certain plan or features. See T-Mobile.com. For JD Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.